It's Tuesday, August 28th, and this is episode 60 of Birdland BS. Today on the show, special guest from Russell Street Report and his latest podcast, Neutral Zone Infraction, Michael Telford, a.k.a. Chibs, joins us. The Ravens have to limp home after the game in Miami, and the Orioles quest for 50 wins. Stay tuned.
So let's take it to the Birdland. That Baltimore home flavor is coming firsthand. Fred Scott and Ryan, tell them the word, man. Mixing a little BS to make it work, man. Sports, they got it. Want excitement, the topic. Make sure when they toss you the ball, you don't drop it. With all that swag, you're gonna listen regardless. Here comes the pitch, so it's time to get it started. It's Birdland BS.
What's up, BSers? Fred Scott here. As I mentioned, joined today by Russell Street Report's newest edition, Chibs. What's going on, man? Appreciate you joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, boys. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem, man. Glad you're here. For those of you that familiar with the Ravens, I'm sure you've found him or seen him on Twitter at some point, at This Is Chibs.
Always chiming in, man. Always chiming in.
Give the listeners a little background, man. What are you doing these days? Russell Street Report, new podcast, where everybody can check you out.
Yeah. So now I took over for Tony Lombardi, writing the Chicken Box on Russell Street Report.
Nice.
I'll probably sprinkle some of my opinion-based articles in there as well. I'm also starting a podcast called Neutral Zone Infraction with Adam Bona. I'm not even going to try
to Bona, not going to try to butcher it.
Yeah. Exactly. I call him Danny Bonaducci.
There you go.
He also writes for Russell Street Report. So that's starting Friday. We're going to get our first episode up. We'll have film study on there. Do our final 53-man roster predictions, all that.
There you go. Essentially, man,
you can follow me at This Is Chibs on Twitter. Always up to interact with Ravens fans as long as it's not something overly ridiculous. So I have a good time there. In the past, I mean, I've written for a bunch of places and done a bunch of stuff, but I'm pretty happy where I'm at right now because Russell Street Report, like, gives me my freedom and lets me do what I do.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. The work that you guys have done and that you've done is specifically just in the little bit of time I've known you, man. It's been impressive. You've got quite the following. For those of you who don't know Chibs, quite the personality, quite the character, man with no filter, but we wouldn't want it any other way. Because that's what makes you, my friend.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how it is.
Right.
If I and that's one thing I like about Russell Street Report, man, is, you know, I can crack all the jokes I want and take pot shots at players if I need to and
there
do
you
all
go.
That stuff. So it's good.
Nice. Well, before we get too deep into anything, first things first, I got to give a huge shout out to my boy Matt for the fire new intro. I don't know if you heard that, Chiz. This is the first time we played that today. I love it. Matt and I have known each other for years. We go back to our days in Circus City. He put this together for us in really a matter of a couple of days, and I can't thank him enough. For those hip hop fans out there, please go check this guy out. Everything is MD's Finest. That's MDSFYNEST. Check him out on Spotify, Instagram, his website, www.mdsfinest.com. Real good dude, and we appreciate him doing this for us.
Yeah, man,
sure.
It came out really good. We did everything we asked him to do. He came out awesome.
Dude did it with no guidance, man. I gave him a little bit of info, what we wanted, and he knocked it out of the park, as always. So we appreciate that, Matt. But yeah, let's dive right into things, man, with the Ravens. So I guess we'll talk about the latest news that came out today as the Ravens trade Kamale Correa to the Titans for a future draft pick. I think I saw you mention Chibs. Was it a 2019 sixth-round pick? Is that right?
Yeah, it's a sixth-round pick, which, I mean, is actually a pretty good return considering he was a guy that wasn't going to see the field. He might not even have made the roster. So I think all in all, they did a good job there. He reunites with Michael Campanaro. Everybody's favorite defensive coordinator, Dean Pease. Kendrick Lewis, a couple other guys from the Ravens. So I think it'll be a good chance for him to start fresh. I think he needs it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are being a little hard. If you read on social networking, they're being really hard on Ozzie for, you know, failing at this second round pick. But if you really look at his draft in 2016, he had a pretty damn good draft minus the second and third round. You know, we got a lot of talent. Sometimes you swing and miss. You hate to see that in any kind of high round draft pick, a first round pick, which we're obviously dealing with Perryman now, the second round pick with Correa. So you hate to see that. But, you know, look, we haven't, again, really given him a shot to shine. He was an outside linebacker that Pease decided to move inside. Never really got him a chance to, you know, to give a fair shake at where he was best suited. And then he goes back out to Pease in Tennessee. We hope we actually use him right this time. It's crazy.
Well, I know that Fred, you and I talked about, he showed like flashes here and there. You know, I was curious to get Chibbs' opinion. What did you see? You know, obviously you feel that he was this draft pick for him is well worth it. But what did you see out of him? Do you see potential, or do you just see, you know, a failure pick kind of deal?
All right, man. So in that draft, I had him slated as a third-round pick. So I think he was a reach to begin with.
Right.
And I apologize to everyone. If you get motion sickness from me moving around all the time, that's why I haven't set my studio up yet. Because I like to walk when I talk. He has the potential for sure. He was used situationally inside at Boise. He should never have been moved to a full-time inside linebacker at the pros. So that was wrong of them. Has he shown flashes? Sure, he showed flashes in the Hall of Fame game, but those are, you know, they're part of the 1,200 players that are not going to have a job come Saturday. So did he really show flashes, or is it just something that we hoped we see because he was a second-round pick? Is that like a little bit of homerism coming out instead of us just realizing, hey, like, Ozzie messed up?
Right.
I personally think that he does have the potential. I don't think he was a second-round pick. I don't think that he's going to be anything more than a backup in Tennessee. I don't know. I was never really high on him.
Right.
I was higher on the picks that we got from trading back for him. Honestly, I mean, you're Willie Henry and you're Matt Judon.
Right.
And obviously those worked out better. So, yeah, he probably has the potential, but it's not potential to be anything great. We're not going to go see him go to Tennessee and blow up and then everybody be mad at Ozzie because he traded away, you know, a stud. He's just going to be a backup career special teams guy. Just who he is at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, you know what? If he can play another 6-7 years being that guy, good on him. You know, I mean, to extend an NFL career that long, yeah, like you said, I never saw the value in him being a second round pick either. So you know, it is what it is. Ozzie took a reach at the guy; it didn't work out. And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But you did mention another guy in Tennessee, Michael IR Campanero. Landed back on the IR yet again. This is a guy that, you know, coming out of Wake Forest and being a local guy, I was kind of high on. I was kind of hoping, you know, he another flash kind of guy. You know, every time he got on the field, he showed promise. He has talent. He just can't stay on the field. Another piece of glass.
Yeah, he's a little dude, man, and it just, I think everything just kind of worked against him. I don't even know that he's injury prone. I think he's just one of those guys that's bad luck prone.
Right.
And I think that just followed him down in Tennessee. I mean, poor kid, because I like the kid. He's a great kid off the field.
Right.
He can't put it all together as far as staying healthy and showcasing that talent that he has. And then, I mean, let's face facts, Baltimore is probably not the ideal situation for a late-round wide receiver to kind of grow and flourish in. You know, you're only going to have one that does that every 5 years. You know, Torrey Smith and now Chris Moore.
Right.
You know, Michael Campanero never stood a chance because he was always pushed down the depth chart or on IR.
Right. Well, we'll stick with the wide receiver position. So, catch everybody up. Ravens beat the Dolphins 27-10 in their fourth preseason, but preseason week 3. Wide receivers. So where are you at with this team in wide receivers, Chib? Scott and I have kind of been debating it back and forth the past couple weeks, just like everybody else. How do you see the wide receivers shaking out now with, obviously, Scott being placed on the IR, the stash job? We all know that's what that is.
Yep, sorry, Adam. That was a stash job.
Absolutely, 100% is a stash job. What do you see the Ravens doing at the wide receiver position? Do you see them carrying 5, 6, maybe even 7 wide receivers? And how many do they carry on the active roster?
I think it's 6, man, honestly. 7's too much, especially with the injuries and everything that have come down the pipeline. You almost have to keep an extra tight end at this point. You almost have to keep an extra cornerback, maybe an extra DL with Willie Henry and his hernia. So, I mean, the top 4 are locks, right? I think we can agree on that.
Yeah,
it's Crabtree, Snead, Brown, and Moore.
Absolutely.
Those 4 are locked. Beyond that, man, I'd say there's only 2 positions left. I think Jordan Lasley snags one of them. I think that's why he's the guy that didn't go on IR.
Right.
And then that last pick, you got to think it's going to be a special teams guy, somebody that can contribute on special teams. That leaves pretty much White or Grant.
Right.
You know, Posey ain't it. Ghost. Ghost definitely ain't it. For those that don't know, Ghost is my nickname for Breshad Perriman because you either never see him on the field or the ball goes through his hands like Ghost.
Right.
I was just about to ask you how you feel on him.
Let's not.
Yeah, let's not get into that. That'll be a tirade for a long time.
Of the special teams guys, like, this is where you get into the conundrum, right? Because Janarian Grant has showed more on returns, he showed more on special teams, but Tim White has started to show more as a wide receiver.
Right.
So you have to find that balance of, you know, with the rules changing for returns, do you want to have a guy that can effectively return, or do you want to have that 6 wide receiver that may never see the field on offense, but if he does, he can produce.
Right. And my feelings on Tim White, I think this guy has a high ceiling. I think whether it's with the Ravens or not, he's going to find a job somewhere. And maybe the Ravens aren't the best system fit for Tim White, but if he's put in the right system, this guy can make it work at the wide receiver position. But as you mentioned, Grant, I think outside of the one fumble that we saw in the second preseason game, I like his elusiveness in the return game. He definitely has the ability to make people miss. It's just, I haven't seen enough out of him from the wide receiver position. Scott, I mean, I don't know how you feel. Like, what's your take on Janarian Grant and Tim White?
For me, Grant hurt himself in the last game with the fumbles. I think he definitely can be a good return guy, but you also can't risk those fumbles. Now, White hasn't shown, I think, quite what you've seen out of Grant in the return game. But to your point, him at the wide receiver position, it gives you a sure backup if you need somebody to come in, somebody needs a break, somebody gets hurt. It's a guy that you can put on the field and know that he's going to at least catch the ball.
Right.
Because he fumbled too.
Yeah, right. They're both equal in that sense as far as the games go, that they both fumbled. Lasley, man, not talking about the return game. As much as I know our wide receiver options aren't really plentiful right now, it's not like we have the best group to pick from. Lasley, I see another Perriman in him in the sense that he just cannot catch the goddamn football. He can't. The pass that he dropped from RG3, I mean, you couldn't have laid it in there any better for him and completely buffed that one. And I went to a couple training camps with this guy, and you and I went there, Scott, and we saw him. I mean, miss kick return after miss kick return after drop at the wide receiver position. I mean, it's been one thing after another with Lasley, but at this point, what do you do? I mean,
you and I went, he got hit in the chest twice during training camp and didn't catch the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you have to keep him.
Right.
You already IR'd Scott. I mean, you have to keep Lasley at this point unless you're going to IR him too or risk him getting picked up by another team, because the kid has talent.
Yeah.
He does have talent. He had insane production, and that was missing games for suspension and having the drop issues. So the kid has talent. It's just a question of bringing it out in him.
Right.
So, man, that's a tough call to make. I mean, honestly, I see it working out with Lasley and then Grant.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you.
Probably the two.
Going into this season, I was high on Tim White. I thought for sure he was like my lock to kind of make the roster. You know, not going to be.
Ceiling's a wide receiver 3, though. Everybody was high on Tim White because he made one catch for 30 yards that ended in a touchdown.
Right.
That is why everyone was high on Tim White.
Yeah,
I mean, his ceiling is a WR3.
Right. Yeah, and
do with that. That's not the answer.
Right. No, I get that. That's absolutely true. It's just with the lack of options that we had coming into this season, you had a project receiver and you knew it was a project receiver in Jahleel Scott when you drafted him. This guy, you know, coming out of a small college. Yes, he was tall. He was lanky, but he was a very raw talent and obviously couldn't mask it and couldn't put it together before the season started. So he lands on the IR. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do. And you'd mentioned earlier, you know, we've got this little bit of an injury bug that finally hit the team. You know, we all kind of were on pins and needles waiting for it to happen.
That's why this show is called Dr. Feelgood.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you were knocking on wood each week, like no injuries. All right, we're getting out of this one healthy. We're getting out of this one healthy. And you could kind of see how the 53-man roster was going to shake out. But now here we are a week away from the season starting, or a little over a week away. And we get hit with, you know, a few pretty big injuries, at least big enough that it clouds up the opening day roster. We'll start with the Hayden Hurst going down with the stress factor in his foot. Had the surgery to put the screw in. He's going to miss at least, they're saying, 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Chibs, you mentioned possibly carrying another tight end just, you know, because of the depth.
They're going to. There's
right.
No way around it.
So who do you see making what do they carry four beyond
because so Hurst is still going to take a roster spot. There's no way around that. They're not going to IR him because it's so short term. So he's one of the four. They're going to keep three beyond him.
Okay.
Boyle is making the team. He's the best blocker. Andrews is making the team. He was a third round pick. Most people would say Williams in this situation. I think it's Waller.
Really?
Waller offers. Yeah, I mean, he's – so you got to think of it this way, right? So he's tight end four. So he's not going to see the field on offense.
Right, and what he brings in special teams.
Four. It's what he brings to special teams, plus he's a red zone threat. He has less injury risk than Max Williams. Because I'll tell you what, man, if Max Williams goes in there and breaks a toenail like he always does, then the tight end situation is worse than before.
Yeah.
You got to rely on Nick Boyle, who underrated athleticism, decent hands – but he's slower than a freight train.
Right.
And then the other guy you got to rely on is essentially a wide receiver in a tight end's body. So I think Darren Waller kind of makes the most sense. Just a good combination of size, speed, skill, and special teams.
I agree with you to a degree, but here's my question to you. Knowing John Harbaugh and how John Harbaugh is with play the right way, being clean, and kind of having to win John Harbaugh over again. You know, this is a guy coming off of a suspension. Do you think that there's been enough time for Waller to kind of get back in his good graces, that he wins the job outright with Harbaugh there?
All I'm saying is, man, they had Jalen Acklin on the roster. They liked Jalen Acklin. There was no reports of Jalen Acklin being hurt, and then all of a sudden Jalen Acklin got waived, so Darren Waller
that's true.
Back on the team.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Point taken.
I think he's there, too, with the fact that Harbaugh's always been a favorite for special teams guys.
Right.
So if he's bringing that special teams piece.
He's on a very special teams-heavy team.
Oh, yeah, huge.
Right, exactly. So another guy, a rookie that I saw a lot of promise in, a guy that didn't really know a whole lot about him coming out of the draft, the safety out of Texas, DeShaun Elliott, exactly. man, he's looked good. He's looked good in training camp. He's got a almost like a Bernard Pollard kind of attitude about him. He's a thumper. I like this kid, but ended up getting a fractured forearm in this last preseason game. Probably going to be out for the year, if not damn near the entire year. What do we do now at the defensive back? How many corners are we looking to carry now? I mean, obviously, I was kind of personally, I was on the bubble about Averett. I know he's a draft pick, but what he showed me in this last game really solidified for me. I think he makes this team without a question. Now I was kind of questioning it first couple of practice. I went and watched him, and he looked lost. He was getting beat. I know you're high on this guy, so tell me where you stand with the cornerbacks and safeties.
Safeties, we were going to keep four either way.
Right.
Now it's just a different four. I mean, we were going to keep, obviously, Eric Weddle, Tony Jefferson, Chuck Clark, who's the third starter, and then we were going to keep DeShaun Elliott.
Right.
I think you know, we're just going to keep Levine now instead.
Okay. So you thought Levine was actually on the outs, huh?
I did. I thought they would trade experience for youth.
Okay.
Deshaun Elliott's a thumper. He'd be good in that, you know, that linebacker role kind of in the dime. So I thought that's the move they would make. Now they don't have to, so they can keep Levine and keep him doing what he does. He plays – he's got the leadership. He plays well. He does a lot of things that the Ravens like to do, and he does them well. So I think those are your four safeties. As far – I would really like to keep Kai Nakua. Nakua.
Right.
I don't know how to say his name. I just like – I like the sparks that he's shown, and I like the flashes that he's shown. I don't think we're going to keep him. I would like to. But that would be a luxury at this point. As far as corners, man, Jimmy Smith not taking up a roster spot right now is huge for us.
Right.
You got Marlon Humphrey, you got Brandon Carr, you got Tavon Young. That's your starting three.
Yep.
Beyond that, they're going to keep Anthony Averett. It is going to happen.
Yeah.
They're going to keep Maurice Kennedy.
What about Baptiste? He's the guy that I was on the bubble about, but he's played great.
I think he's the guy that they keep until Jimmy Smith comes back.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense.
You know, he's had a very strong offseason. He's shown that he can be a pro wide receiver. Sorry, cornerback. Jesus. and then he kind of capped that off with interception in the last two games in a row. So I think Baptiste probably makes this team as a depth piece, just in case. And I think that pretty much what rounds out your defensive backfield.
Yeah, and you mentioned having a strong offseason. One guy that has looked really good since the start of camp, lost a bunch of weight, and one thing I've been impressed with as a whole with this team has been the pass rush, but specifically Tim Williams. Are you a believer in Tim Williams? Do you feel strongly about this guy?
So I was a believer in Tim Williams when we drafted him.
Yeah.
Just like a pure rusher. That's all he
did. He's a specialist.
He was a quarterback killer.
Yep.
I was a believer. And then last year, I was so disappointed. And I never once apologized for being wrong, because I was like, no, this kid has it. I know he has it. And I'm glad that he's kind of showing me that in this preseason. I think that could translate. I think he is the one-for-one rush backer.
Right.
I think he can come in and spell the guys when they need it, keep them rested. I think we'll see a heavy rotation with a heavy dose of Tim Williams. If he can keep that stuff up, man, that is so huge. If he comes in on third down and he's just like CQB, kill QB. That's something that we've been missing for a long time.
Absolutely.
So question for you, because we went to training camp, that was one thing we saw was he was right there in front of us. He's slimmed down a lot from last year. How much do you think that plays a role in him getting in a little bit better physical shape to how he's playing?
It's huge. So at Alabama, Tim Williams had this first step, and then he would couple that with a swim move or a power move and get around his blocker, and he would just get to the QB. When he put on the weight, he wasn't able to do that anymore. So I think slimming down and kind of trimming the body fat and everything like that enables him to get back to that huge first step that bursts off the line that he can just and he's built up his arsenal of moves to get around blockers, and I think that helps a lot. I think the whole him slimming down was probably the key. Couple that with a year of NFL experience and learning from people and things like that, and you have a weapon.
For me last year, the frustration with Williams, he couldn't get out of the tackle's grip. I mean, like you said, it almost like he had lost that burst that he had in Alabama, and he'd run right into the chest of the tackle and just couldn't get around the edge. But loving what I'm seeing so far out of Williams in camp.
Yeah, we actually got a question for you, Chips, from Michael on YouTube. He says, who's going to have a better season, Tyus or Tim Williams?
Oh, good question.
Cool.
That's a good one.
Define a better season. Because I think Tim Williams is going to have a better season rushing the QB and creating pressure. Mm-hmm. I think Tyus Bowser, this might come as a shock to people, but I think Tyus Bowser has a better year in coverage.
Okay. Makes sense.
I think Tyus Bowser is that guy that they can move inside, outside, kind of create mismatches, get him to cover RBs, maybe a tight end here and there, I think Bowser is kind of that guy that'll be moved around. So I think Tyus Bowser will have a better all-around year, but I think when it comes to quarterback pressure, sacks, things like that, that's going to be Tim Williams for sure.
All right, so I'm going to bring this up because this is a debate that Scott and I got into last week, and we talked about it a little bit.
I knew you were going here.
You mentioned being good in coverage. For me, C.J. Mosley. So an issue, obviously, that everybody knows with C.J. Mosley is his ability to cover. Outside of that, he's a pretty good, pretty damn good middle linebacker. So the Ravens drafted Kenny Young out of UCLA to kind of help pair with C.J. Mosley for that, you know, that particular situation.
Is the new Daryl Smith.
Yeah, exactly. C.J. Mosley, is he worth top five inside linebacker money?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
I'm kidding. He's not worth top three. He might be worth three, but he's not worth highest paid linebacker in the league.
All right, let me be more direct. Do you want to see the Ravens pay this guy top Absolutely three money? Not.
Absolutely not. We already did it with Brandon Williams, and even though Brandon Williams plays a huge role in the defense and the run defense is so much better when he's in the lineup, he's still overpaid. I'm sick of us overpaying players.
Agreed.
On a promise of future performance.
Absolutely.
Brandon Williams, as soon as we paid him, we got injured. Yep. Joe Flacco, as soon as we paid him, went downhill. Everybody that we pay does not live up to it. Pay him a good, not great salary. Give him top five money. Absolutely. If you think top five, he wants to stay in Baltimore.
Right.
If top five money will keep him in Baltimore, why pay him top three?
Right.
You don't want to get into another situation where down the road we're sitting under dead money, like with Jimmy Smith, Dennis Pitta, anything like that. You don't want to get into that situation again. For the first time in a long time next year, we're going to have breathing space with the cap. And then the year after that, it's projected to have over $100 million in cap on the Ravens.
Yeah.
When have you heard of that before for Baltimore?
Right. No.
I'll wait.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You'll be waiting for a while because it hadn't happened.
With Lamar Jackson potentially progressing and starting and things like that, you have to save that cap space.
All right.
You have a lot of players, a lot of young talent that is locked up into 2022, things like that. You have to be smarter. Eric DaCosta has to be smarter about these contracts and build a team around Lamar Jackson. Otherwise, that was a wasted pick, and we will wade in mediocrity for 5 years.
You done triggered the name for Fred now.
Well, I got two more big topics to talk about before I let you go. First one, obviously the popular one that everybody kind of wants to know here, the quarterback situation. I have been one that...
What situation?
Here's what I'm going to say. So since day one for me, up until these injuries, I have been saying the Ravens carry three quarterbacks this year. I'm not saying that three quarterbacks are going to be on active game day, but the Ravens carry three quarterbacks because Lamar is just...
They still do.
It's just not ready. And that's going to be my question to you. So even with these injuries that we've been tied to and the extra tight end, the extra defensive lineman, the extra DB... You still see the Ravens carrying three quarterbacks?
So with the way the injuries shook out, people going on IR and suspensions, like people aren't taking up roster spots, so there was still room to keep an extra DL. There was still room to keep an extra tight end, an extra CB.
Right.
Excuse me. Good. None of that changes. That is why we're opening the roster up by shipping out Camille Correa, and now we're using that pick package with more bubble players to try to find O-line help. That is why we're opening the roster up a little bit with these bubble players, because they are wanting to keep three quarterbacks. If you ask my opinion, that's what it is shaping up like. If you read between the lines and you look at all these moves separately instead of as a whole, they're trying to open room for RG3, because regardless of what John Harbaugh says with his coach speak about how, you know, Lamar kind of had a breakout game. Yeah, I'm sure he did. They still want to keep RG3.
It was against a bunch of McDonald's workers.
Yeah, exactly. They want to keep RG3 because RG3 gives us the best chance to win if Joe Flacco goes down.
So that was actually going to be my next question. So you believe the pecking order is going to be Joe, RG3, Lamar, and not like most people think of Joe, Lamar, RG3?
Oh, absolutely. At least for this year. I mean, in the future, if you're viewing Lamar Jackson as the longtime starter, then you can view RG3 as the longtime backup because it's kind of a plug-and-play option as far as the offense is going to run and everything like that. But for right now, RG3 is the more pro-ready quarterback.
Right.
He looks like the best of the backups. Yeah, I mean, Joe Flacco has been head and shoulders above all of them, but RG3 is in that next tier by himself.
Agreed.
And then it's Lamar Jackson and Josh Woodruff.
Well, answer this for me and just correct me if I'm wrong. So I see it playing out. They carry all three quarterbacks, but on game day, starting the season, active, you will have Flacco and Lamar active. And the reason I say that is because of the Lamar package. You have to have him active to have a Lamar package put in.
So I don't think it'll be a given that it's Lamar. I think you will be able to tell sometimes if that package is coming up by what the active personnel are.
Makes sense.
So I think some weeks you're going to see Joe Flacco and RG3, then some weeks you'll see Joe Flacco and Lamar, and you will see the Lamar package, but then you will also see Joe Flacco and Lamar, but you won't see the Lamar package, and they do it that way to keep teams guessing. The only way they're going to do that, though, is if they feel comfortable with Lamar. If they don't think Lamar gives them a chance to win if Joe Flacco goes down in the first quarter, they're not going to do that.
Right. And I totally agree. That's exactly what I was saying last week.
You see all three of them. Yeah. There's going to be times you see all three of them active just to throw the other team off.
Right.
And just to give themselves an out in case something does happen.
Yeah, that was my big thing is I know that you, Fred, you said that you thought that it was going to be RG3 kind of sitting off, and he's on the 53, but not the active roster for, starting the season.
I didn't see personally, and you brought up a good point, Chib, so I completely agree with you. I just saw it as you have to have Lamar active if you want to use a Lamar package. You keep RG3 off the active day roster so you can carry another corner, so you can carry another offensive lineman, so you can carry another, wherever you want to fill in the hole. And then if Flacco goes down with a serious enough injury, where he's going to be out for weeks or he's going to be out for the season, you let Lamar finish that game, but then you activate RG3 next week, and then RG3 is your starting quarterback for that following week. That's how I kind of saw it playing out.
But you could also keep all three active because at the end of the day, if you have like wide receiver injuries, Lamar Jackson could always go out and play wide out, right?
that would be wild to see for sure.
Well, see, I think the other thing too is even if RG3 is there, you can still RG3 can somewhat plug in for anything you would do with Lamar Jackson. So while it's the Lamar package,
exactly. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, right.
That's what I was saying is that RG3 is your long-time backup. Because then you have that plug-and-play option.
Right.
He's still a semi-mobile quarterback that can scramble if he needs to. They can run those trick plays, all that stuff.
All right, so one more thing before I let you go. The big thing that's kind of got me holding my breath, the offensive line. So the offensive line, we got Ronnie Stanley back. Some good news. We got Ronnie Stanley back and James Hurst returned to practice yesterday. So good news there. I still have questions at center. I still think the Ravens may even go out and add a center once we get down to the 53-man rosters. I like this offensive line.
They're not waiting for the roster.
No, I'm saying that once all teams cut down to their 53, if there's somebody out there available, if they don't make a trade prior, that would be a route that they would go down, okay. is what I'm saying. I like this the way that the offensive line shapes up from a starting standpoint, but man, if one person or one piece goes down, this whole entire offense changes. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. Our offensive line depth is horrible, and it's not just us.
Right.
Before, fans freak out and they're like, oh, well, why didn't Ozzie address this? Nobody addressed it. The Vikings are a Super Bowl-ready team unless they have an offensive line injury.
Right.
The Cowboys have one of the best offensive lines in the league until their guard went down.
Right.
Titans, if Taylor Lewan gets hurt, their offensive line is in shambles. You look at the best offensive lines around this league, there is no offensive line depth. And herein lies the problem. This is why they're taking that sixth-round pick that they got from Kamele Correa, and they're taking bubble players, and they are trying to look for O-line help. That is why, because there is no offensive line depth. The draft classes have been bad. Players have retired. Players have had your career-ending injuries. There's no offensive line depth in this league right now. It is the biggest disparity in this league. hands down.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Chibs, look, man, this has been fun. I appreciate you coming on the show. Always appreciate your insight. Always look forward to your content and reading everything that you put out and listening to everything that you've got to say. For all of our listeners out there, be sure to go check this guy out. If you follow him on Twitter, at This Is Chibs. He's got a new podcast coming out called The Neutral Zone Infraction, and you can also find him on Russell Street Report. Chibs, appreciate you being here, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, boys. We'll do it again later, yeah?
Absolutely,
sounds good,
for sure.
Sounds good.
Take care.
All right, gentlemen. Have a good night.
You too.
See ya.
All right. So, yeah, Chibs is right there on par with basically everything that we've been saying for these last couple of weeks.
Yeah,
but just good to hear that, you know, the optimism is still there, even with these injuries that we've gotten hit with, you know, over the last couple of days, that all is not lost. We're okay. This team's going to be good moving forward.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And his, you know, his Russell Street Report, his first article went out the other day, and it was addressing, you know, it's Ravens are Super Bowl contender, ? You know, and he goes straight into what he's seeing, everything that he's seeing, kind of some of the stuff that we hit on. Go check that out as well, because it's a good read from him. So let's get into it, Fred, with the social media shout out here.
Social media shout out.
We got a bunch of people watching on YouTube. We've had Michael chime in, George chime in, that dope boy chiming in every once in a while.
Dope boy.
all three of them have been asking questions, and we hit on all three of them, you know, with their comments and their questions. We didn't get a chance to ask it, but James did ask, do we see a package with all three QBs?
Yeah, and he hit on that. So that's why I didn't bring it up.
Yeah, we definitely do.
On Facebook, we see you, James, as always. Trish, good to see you. Haven't seen you in a while. Haven't talked to you in a while. Good to see you. Nikki, as always. Jamie, I know you're downstairs watching, so appreciate you tuning in. Lee, good to see you, man. Hope you're feeling better. Joe, good to see you. Sherry, we appreciate you as always. Thank you for the shares as always. Heather, good to see you. I haven't seen you in a long time. Glad you're in checking out the feed. Carly, another one. Haven't seen you in a while. Hope things are going good, and good to see you in the feed.
Yeah, other ones, Steve, Carla. We also had, I saw Dave kind of pop in for a little while. Brittany popping in. Nick just joined us. So everybody kind of joining in with everything that we're talking about, and a lot of comments that we actually address. So
that's awesome. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Appreciate you sharing as always.
All right, you guys, let's listen up. We won a game yesterday. And if we win one today, that's two in a row. We win one tomorrow, that's called a winning streak. It has happened before. So let's see some hustle. Let's jack it up a little. I got a feeling things are about to turn around for us.
That's right, Birdland. We won a game last night.
And oh boy, are they jacked up tonight.
Yeah, things looked good last night. You and I got a chance to go down to the yard. I appreciate you inviting me to go down there with your father.
Not a problem, man.
Spend the night in the humidity down at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Picked a good one. Orioles win yesterday, 7-0. David Hess pitched a gem. Good to see him finally getting back on track and righting the ship.
Yeah, would have liked to see him go a little deeper.
Yeah,
but six innings, and then the bullpen comes out and finishes the shutout.
Absolutely.
So I'll take it. 7-0 win. Big name. He was player of the game last night. You and I actually had the debate on as we were walking up at one point. Who would be the player of the game? It was, okay, is it Hess, who would pitch six solid innings?
Right.
Was it, at that time, he had only had three RBIs with Trey Mancini?
Right.
Or was it, I think we said Jonathan Villar with a stolen base. He was doing well. He
played
like,
a good all around game.
Yeah. I think he went 2-for-2 with two walks and a stolen base.
Right.
I'm going to call it out right now. You were questioning Jonathan Villar. Literally 3 seconds later, you're questioning his speed. Literally 3 seconds later, the guy steals. And you're like, oh, I've never seen him steal. Here he goes.
The big thing about him coming out of Milwaukee was this guy stole 60 bases in a season. And to me, from what I saw on TV, he didn't look that fast. He didn't look that quick to me on TV. Even with his build, he's a little bit of a stocky kind of guy for somebody that quick. But man, in person, watching this guy get out of the box, he had a bunt that he got down the first base line on faster than I've seen like anybody in a long time, like an Ichiro almost getting down the line. I'm not saying he's quite Ichiro speed when he was in his prime, but the way he got out of the box reminded me of that. So yeah,
he was originally called out too, and then they challenged it, and he's safe by a millisecond. Yeah.
I ate my words on that. That's for sure. As soon as I said it, man, stolen base. But tonight, the Orioles promoted left-handed pitcher Josh Rogers, who was acquired in the Zach Britton deal. This guy's pitched to a 2.08 ERA in 30 innings in Norfolk. Did pretty good tonight. I know right before we came on the podcast, he had gotten through five innings and given up three earned runs. So not a bad start for a major league debut, but were you excited to see Rogers get a start?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it was, look, you all know I wasn't the happiest with these some of these moves. I felt like they could have gotten more. But you know what? Let these guys prove me wrong. I love to see it. I wasn't seeing the numbers in the minors for him to come up, especially to be brought up to basically lose a year of
right.
of team control. But at the same time, to come up and be, you know, productive, to come up and be useful. And look, the guy doesn't have fast stuff. The guy was pumping 92 tonight, and they were surprised. And you could tell they were like, he's amped up. He barely hits 89.
Right.
So to be pumping up 92 was pretty impressive for this kid. You know, he's just got to, and Buck said it in pregame, he's got to stay on top of his control of his emotions. He sees a lot of emotion down the minors, which is great, and Buck loves to see that. It's you know, he didn't say it, but the way that Buck was describing it was to me, it sounded like it was Kevin Gausman-esque. You know, right. Gausman pitched with some emotion, and that's something that you like to see from a guy. Not too much, but you got to be in control of it. But the fact that this guy is able to do what he did, you know, unfortunately, literally right before we went on air, he gave up a two-run homer.
Right.
But to be – he was 79 pitches into the – he needed one out more in the fifth to go five strong.
Right.
79 pitches through five. I'm kind of happy with that out of you know, a guy that it's his first major league start, got him from the Yankees, really didn't have much experience.
Right.
I'm happy to see it.
And for me, like I said, I mean, this team, we mentioned it, the quest for 50 wins on an entire season. That means if they won 50, they're going to end up losing over 110 games. I like to see the younger guys come up. I like to see them get their feet wet. You know, September call-ups are about a week away, not even a week away, a couple days away now at this point. So
Saturday, September 1st.
Be good to have them come, you know, even more come up that it, you know, it doesn't affect their eligibility at that point.
Absolutely.
So I like the direction of seeing some of these younger guys go through their bumps and stuff. We talked about with Hess, you know, he came out strong his first couple starts in the majors, went through some growing pains and whatnot, and now he's put together two good starts back-to-back. So yeah, we hope that he can continue to grow off of that. In news today with the Orioles, now this is something you and I have not talked about yet, so I'm interested to see your take on this. The Orioles traded $750,000 in international bonus slot money to the Phillies for first baseman Jack Zollner. He's 23, out of the Gulf Coast League. Hasn't really put up numbers, hasn't lived up to his potential or anything yet. But the Orioles obviously see something in this guy. But here we are. We were trading for international money, and we're trading away international money. What's your take on it?
Unless we're over like some unwritten rule of amount of money a team should have, this is stupid. You just went out and you traded a good deal of international money. I mean, $750,000 for, I know we've got something like six or almost $7 million in the bank, but you traded it for a guy that you are freaking backlogged at. You're backlogged at first base, period. You had to get rid of Christian Walker because you were backlogged at first base. He wasn't going to see the majors for years. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this again? Unless you have an intention of getting rid of Chris Davis or getting rid of Trumbos to move Davis to DH and put Mancini at first and leave Mancini in the outfield. I think Mancini should be at first. But unless you're doing something along those lines and bring this guy up so that Mancini can be plug and play with this guy once you can get rid of Davis and you can have him, you know, Mancini move to DH or something, I just don't see it. The guy's not lighting up numbers where he can come up as a DH. He's not a natural outfielder, and you can't keep doing that to guys like you did it with Walker. You did it with Mancini. You can't keep doing that to these guys. You can't keep putting them in positions that they really aren't comfortable. Look how long it took Mancini to get comfortable, and God forbid when he was playing in Boston.
Yeah, right. All right, so everything that you just said and that emotion and that feeling was exactly how I felt when I first read it and when I first heard the news. I've had a little bit more time to kind of James and I actually talked about this earlier because he kind of freaked out a little bit too about it when he first heard it. And I hadn't had a chance to really look into it, hadn't had a chance to really think about it much, but now I have. And here's the thing. Like you just said, before this trade, the Orioles had a little over $8 million in international
debt. I couldn't remember the exact amount. Yeah,
it's a little over $8 million before this trade. So this puts them a little over $7 million now, even after this trade. I'm going to give the Orioles a little bit of credit. At least say that they know they might know a little bit more about this guy than we know. So just glancing at his stats and looking at him from the outside perspective, nothing looks pretty about it. Nothing looks good. But the Orioles obviously see something in this guy. In the grand scheme of things, $750,000, when you really look at it, even for a minor leaguer, really isn't that much money. Now, I think what had a lot of people, if you read on social media, up in arms about this thing is everybody is still on this whole Victor Mesa train, and everybody wants Victor Mesa, and why are we getting rid of international signing money when that's money that we could be giving it? Take a breath. Breathe. The teams that are in the hunt right now for Victor Mesa have been the Tampa Bay Rays, the Miami Marlins, and us, the Orioles. The closest team to us is between $4 and $5 million in international signing money. There's still plenty of money to be able to get Victor Mesa, and even more if need be. We've already brought in a couple of young international players. We brought in a 16-year-old. We brought in a 19-year-old. Obviously, they're still light years away from contributing.
I think they're still unnamed, too, aren't they? I haven't heard names yet.
Ramirez and... they're baseball names, like Ramirez and something else.
That's a general statement for it.
they're common baseball names. One's Ramirez, and I can't remember the other. Rodriguez, maybe, or something like that. They're baseball names. But yeah, so for all those people out there that are freaking out about the Victor Mesa thing, just relax. We are still in the hunt for Victor Mesa. Now, granted, you know, MLB still hasn't given him the ability and the okay to be signed yet, so that's still got to, you know, clear its way before the Orioles can even do anything.
Don't know what's taking so long on that front, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know.
I haven't figured it out.
I haven't either. And you know, if you try to look into it, you know, there's really not a whole lot there. So I don't think anybody really knows much about it. You know, there's people speculating on things, right, but I'm not one to speculate much. But just relax, take a breath, because if you really look at it, we're still in an okay position to be able to go after them.
Yeah, no, we're not giving away the house, that's for sure. But at the same time, you know, here's the way that I look at it. Just like we're coveting everybody else's farm system right now, that international signing, the more international signers you can play, the more you hold the cards.
Right.
Because now you get a team that is, I'll use Dan Duquette's smart words as much as I hate them, competitive. We're playing competitive baseball now.
Right.
You get a young team like that and you go out and get a piece, that's all it takes. And guess what? If I'm holding all the cards because I've got the majority of the international signings in the past 2 years, I hold the cards. I can get almost anything I want out of that.
Well, that's the other part of that, too, is you bring in a big name like a Victor Mesa. Let's say he pans out, you know, and ends up having a good career. He has a good experience here in Baltimore. All that does is open up the door for more international players. If the Orioles are really serious about being in the international market now and really going after the international players, what better way to advertise than to have somebody here that's gone through the ranks, that's had a good experience? You know, that's, you had brought up a couple weeks ago, the foreign born players, you know, from Korea and from Asia,
like, yeah,
a lot of players from foreign born countries don't want to come here because of some of the bad experience like Wei and Chen's had. And what was the guy's name that we ended up signing? He was young. He was a high prospect, I believe, in Asia or Korea. They brought him in, and he didn't last in the minor league system long, and he ended up going back over.
Oh, God.
I can't think of his name.
You're going to make me reach for it because I can't even think of his name.
We'll never be able to figure it out. Either way, they haven't had good experience with overseas. So it takes that one, right? You get that one international prospect that comes in here, has a good experience, and now you've got a spokesperson internally for other international players that come in.
Right.
And you need that, especially when you're going up against the likes of the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox that already have the quote-unquote sex appeal about them. You know what I mean? You got to have something that's going to be attractive, and you got to have that kind of appeal.
You have to. I mean, you have to, and you bring up a great point. There's been so many players that have come through that have had bad experiences. You know, some may argue, and I until I hear otherwise from him, I will believe this. Kim. Kim is a great example.
Yeah,
The guy should have been playing every day. Right? I was on the bandwagon at first.
He went back over there. He's tearing it up.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, tearing it up.
Him and I think Adam Loewen. He's on Adam Loewen's team.
Yeah, right.
But no, so I look at it and I say, I was really on that train. Like, I was so upset when he didn't go down to the minors,
right.
And then he starts blowing up. I'm like, okay, maybe he did really just need time to settle in. And then it's like the guy never could get in a groove, and he was the Nick Markakis of the team. He was your consistent hitter. Right. He was an Ichiro professional style hitter. But when the guy's not getting at bats, things are going to be hit or miss.
Yeah.
If he's only going out there against, you know, lefties, there's a decent amount of lefties in the league, but there's not that many lefties. That's why people covet strong lefties. That's why Clayton Kershaw is one of the most coveted lefties, in my opinion, potentially of all time.
Right.
But at the same time, you have to invite these players in. You have to treat them well. You know, to your point, when they're not feeling welcome, they're not going to go back to Korea or Japan or any of these places and go, yeah, go play for the Orioles.
Right.
No, they're going to go say, the Orioles.
Right. Exactly.
They treated me like crap. You know, that's kind of going to be their mentality. So, yeah, you have to, but that's why I also would like to see them just pulling these guys. Let them have a great experience with the Orioles. Even if they don't get to the majors, you pull them in, they have a good experience in the farm system, and you still hold all the cards, because then it's, hey, we got you to a team that really wanted you and was able to get you to the higher level faster than we could.
Yeah, I agree. It starts with one, with the international market. You got to get that big one, that big name in here first. You got to get that spokesperson in here, and hopefully we'll do that. You brought up a point that getting back in your groove. One guy that has not been able to find his groove, Dylan Bundy. This is a guy that you were projecting Cy Young, dark horse Cy Young. What the hell is going on with Dylan Bundy?
Mental at this point.
Mental is affecting his velocity, though? Because that's the one thing I've really noticed is the lack of velocity. This is a guy that, yes, in high school, he was throwing 99-100. He had the arm injury. He never got back to 99-100, but he was throwing 96-97 when he needed to. You're not seeing that anymore.
I haven't seen. We talked about it last week.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't see out of Bundy, I really paid attention in his start this week. He's not changing velocities. He's going out there, and he's trying to throw the 93-94 every fastball. He's not dialing it back to 92-91-90, where he should be. He's trying to go out there, and he's still trying to muscle. I think he's chasing the radar at this point. Look at every fastball he's throwing. He's leaving them out up and up over the plate, and that's what's happening. Guys are hitting him. When you leave it out up and over the plate, that's what's going to happen. You're going to get hit, and you're going to get hit hard.
Right.
And that's what's happening. He's leaving it out over the plate. He's not. It's a predictable pitch. If I know, we talked about it last week. If I know it's coming in at 94, it's real easy to time, real quick, and it only takes me one time through the lineup. That's why he's struggling. If he gets through the first, he struggles to get through the second and the third, because those guys that are up in the first are going in and they're telling him, "Yeah, he's only throwing the 94 heat tonight. Don't expect the 94.
Right.
Expect the 93. That's what's coming." And that's all he's doing, and he's not adjusting. He's not,
yeah, pitching. Change of speeds is definitely something that, like we talked about before, you know, it extends players' careers. If they can master the strike zone and then learn how to change speeds, you're going to have a long career in this league.
I do question, though, how much does look, Caleb, I love you, man, but you're not a veteran leader catcher.
Right.
How much does not having a veteran leader catcher affect guys like Cobb, Cashner, and
do you put that Bundy. More on? Do you put that more on Caleb, or do you put that more on coaching, Roger McDowell?
I don't know. I think who knows. I think Caleb doesn't have the freedom to call a game. If I'm being honest, I don't think he's given the freedom that Matt Wieters ever was. I don't think he's given the freedom that Wellington Castillo ever was. I think that plays a huge role. But along the same lines, I think he's not given that freedom because he's proven his inconsistency.
Good point.
So I think having a guy that, you know, gets crossed up. I mean, how many times have we seen Caleb get crossed up this year?
Yeah,
it happens more than it should. I look at it and I say you need a veteran catcher, not a guy that's. It doesn't need to be a guy that's lighting it up, but you need a guy that can call the game. That's why I was actually sad to see Castillo go. I think Castillo could call a good game, and they could let him and give him a little bit of a leash. And so that affects your pitchers. That affects the mentality of these guys. I've got to throw it hard because if I can't trust my breaking ball, that Caleb's going to catch it if I don't have it.
Right.
I can throw it and get guys to chase. But if Caleb can't get it, what does it help?
Right.
So I think that plays a big role. Gausman's a great example.
Well, that's going to be my next point. He's now over in Atlanta. He's 4-1 since the trade. 1.69 ERA. I mean, is it coincidence? Is it the teams he's pitching against? Now, listen, he's not pitching in the AL East anymore. He's not going up against the Red Sox. He's not going up against the Yankees. He's not going up against the Blue Jays. In those games that Gausman has pitched, he's had two games against the Marlins. He's had a game against the Mets. And I can't remember who the other game was. Not quite the same talent-wise. And you're in a league, obviously, in the National League, where, you know, you're really only facing eight hitters a night versus nine. You're naturally, even all things considered and all things consistent, you're naturally going to see a decrease in ERA just shifting one league to the next. You're naturally going to see that. But this is a pretty substantial drop. There have been some slight tweaks that they've made with him where he's standing on the mound and that kind of thing. What is your take on that? Do you think that's just kind of luck of the draw as to who he's playing against? Do you think it's mental? Do you think it's, you know, playing for a contender? Like, what do you think it is?
You know, at first I thought it was interesting because his first outing, Atlanta said, yeah, I think he went eight strong. Mm. And Atlanta said, well, yeah, we just had to move over a little bit. I think that played a little bit of role, a little mental. I mean, to my dad's point, one inch shouldn't change how you pitch a game.
No, it really shouldn't.
But that outside fastball or that inside fastball that's an inch off the plate is now catching the corner, and it's going to get called a little bit more. You know, you're also going to be looking at it from, going back to my Caleb Joseph conversation, Kurt Suzuki is a veteran catcher down there.
Yeah.
And he is going to provide leadership. He's going to, you know, even when Tyler Flowers is in there, he's like a Matt Wieters was. When Matt Wieters wasn't in, Matt Wieters was still calling the game. You don't believe me? Go back and look at the videos when they show the sideline. Matt Wieters was relaying in the signs.
Right. No, that's true.
So, you know, when you have a veteran catcher, it does play a huge role when you have, not to really go on to it, but when you have a competent pitching coach, it helps.
Yeah, I mean, look, some people are out there blowing it up that, you know, it's definitely the pitching coach. It's definitely the fact that he moved over a couple inches on the there's so many factors that play into this. It's a small sample size, one. He's pitching for a contender, two. He's pitching against weaker lineups, three. Pitching against eight batters instead of nine every night, four. I mean, there's so many things that could go into this thing that make it all what it is. At the end of the day, there's another pitcher that left this organization that's pitching better than he was here. And of course, it's going to create ruckus around here. It's going to create frustration.
Well, it creates big frustration, too, because these were top guys that in our organization, they were predicted to be true number
Save
one.
Save the rotation kind of guys. Yeah.
Well, and they were predicted to be true number one starters. And right. I mean, Max Scherzer style starters. That was the ceiling for Arrieta. That was the ceiling for Gausman. And that was the ceiling for Bundy. And none of them panned out in Baltimore. But it's ironic that two of the three, they go to another team. And look, it's a small sample size. See what happens through the rest of the season, the playoffs. And we'll see what happens next year, because Gausman's under their control for the next year and a half. Or, I'm sorry, 2 years, actually, because I think he's got an option on the second year. So we'll see what happens.
Can this team win 12 more games?
Well, they need 11 if they win tonight. So
can they get to 50?
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Go. And the only reason I say that, you and I talked about it last night for you fans that are out there listening and watching, go look at the – go look at what we go up against the rest of the season. Go look at the schedule. Because we just, you know, we didn't hit on it too much. We played a Yankees team. We played a Yankees B team.
Right.
A B team for the Yankees. And they whooped our butts.
Yeah.
You know, so to go up against, they're gonna be in the hunt because they need to take out Boston. And it's going to be a fight to the death between them and Boston. That's what the last week of this week and a half of the season are.
If there's any silver lining, this weekend's the battle for Bobby Witt Jr. between us and Kansas City. As awful, as bad as we have played this year, they are right on the heels of playing just as bad as we are. And, you know, as much as I'd like to see this team get to 50 wins, if 50 gets us the second pick versus 49 gets us the Bobby Witt Jr., I'm pulling for 49. Let's go 49.
I'll take it. I really don't want I don't want 50 wins at this point. I'll take it as we're going to just die. We're just going to roll over and die. So
it's time for the 2 minute warning.
All right, Scott, it's that time. 2 minute warning. You've got the reins this week.
It wasn't a big news topic week, but I got some good ones, I feel.
All right. Well, Scott, your 2 minute warning, it starts now.
All right, in news, Larry Fitzgerald, Luis Gonzalez, former D-back, and Shane Doan, the former Coyote, are all going to speak and were asked to speak by John McCain's wife for his service on Thursday. Three different players, three different backgrounds, all honoring someone who's been impactful, regardless of your view. He's been impactful in that state, and he's been impactful in the country. One way or another, however you feel it, it's been impactful. Quite interesting. Sources told ESPN that Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones are retaining their stakes in DraftKings despite the company deciding to shift their focus from the fantasy draft daily stuff to more of the sports betting, with the decision coming down that sports betting is going to be legal.
Nice.
After 16 seasons, Manu Ginobili is hanging up after 1,057 regular season games, 218 playoff games, top five in all time in their franchise for the Spurs, killing it in points. Last season, averaged 8.9 points per game and 20 minutes per game.
Dude was a hell of an all-around player, man.
Yeah, while he's not considered the greatest of all time, some are saying he's not a Hall of Famer. I think he will be. But his biggest moment, when he swatted that bat out of the air on Halloween against the Kings in 2009. Mets and Phillies taking over... Jose Bautista. Phillies claim them all for revocable trades. We'll see what trade winds up working out of that. We also see that Alex Guerrero is in the news again. If you don't know that name, that's Tom Brady's personal trainer from TB12.
Guy can't stay out of the news.
Yeah, the guy can't stay out of the news. Brady was asked about him. Brady refuses to answer. Belichick's response was, everyone just needs to let it go. Every team has a guy like this in their organization. It's not there. Bob Costas, he's going to be stepping away potentially from NBC, and we'll see where that goes. And Andrew Luck.
Almost got it in.
Andrew Luck, he's got the worst. Yeah, that's right. He's down and dealing with a foot injury. Now, sources say it's minor, but the Colts really need to take the horseshoe off all their helmets and just stick it on Andrew Luck because he really freaking needs it at this point.
Yeah, I have stayed for his clear of him in all my fantasy football drafts so far. Yeah, that's a guy that I will not draft in any of my leagues. Speaking of fantasy football, We just got done the other day our Baltimore Fantasy Football League, which included Chibs. Yeah, we didn't even get a chance to talk about that. A bunch of other podcasters and bloggers and journalists in the Baltimore area were all kind of competing for the rights to the Twitter Fantasy Football Championship. I feel confident about our team. I don't like our running backs, but we got a hell of a lot of wide receivers. We're deep there that if we need to make some trades, we've got some riches at that position. So
I think somebody commented, I think one of the guys that somebody commented saying, whoever's got this, I'd be open for a trade. I was like, I think we have one of those guys. I was like,
That was a lot of fun with all those guys, definitely. As I mentioned last week, we are partnering with Section 336 in the sense that Josh has put together a new website, birdlandsports.com, where he is basically doing a catch-all for all of the best of Baltimore local podcasts, local blogs. So if you like our show and you're looking for more content because one day a week's not enough, go over to birdlandsports.com, check out Section 336, check out Ken McCusick's film study podcast. That guy, I mean, he gets into the nitty gritty of the stats and the breakdown of each individual players. That guy, I mean, I don't know how much he's got, 36 hours in a 24-hour day somehow. I don't know how he gets into all the stuff he gets into, but
yeah, man. I mean, and that's the thing too, is it directs you, you know, from there, it directs you to everybody's, you know, individual sites and everything. So it's great. You know, it's just another way, you know, for being able to catch all that news, but also direct you to, you know, to our site particularly, you know, make sure you go check that out. So with that being said, what a show, Fred.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks again to Chibs for tuning in with us and breaking down the Ravens roster and some of the moves that we've seen this week.
Celebrating episode 60. I do have to do a shout out. We had some people come on. We had Matt. We had Ryan join us. Carrie joined us. So plenty of people joining in.
Yeah, Jen Scott, I've seen you watch. Cool to see you come in the room. Haven't seen you in a long time, so appreciate it.
Yeah, everybody kind of in. We want to remind all of you to be sure to check us out on our website, www.birdlandbs.com. You can find all of our episodes there, as well as learn about each of us. You'll also be able to reach out, contact us. You got comments, you want to talk about something, we're more than happy to hear it. And also go check out the gear page. You got plenty of Birdland BS gear. There's hoodies, there's hats, there's t-shirts. Go check it out. It's all awesome gear. And there's going to be some more coming. Fred's working on something with that. We're going to share that later on. Be sure to follow us on all of our social media sites at Birdland BS, at Fred Birdland BS, and at Scott Birdland BS on Twitter. Also, search Birdland BS on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Once you find us on there, like, share, comment, follow, set your alerts so you can stay involved with us. We want to be involved with you guys. If you want to listen to the audio podcast on the go while you drive home, while you're at the gym grinding it out, you can find us on iTunes Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, the TuneIn app, and Stitcher. So make sure you look us up and subscribe on all of those. And, man, always a good time. Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next Tuesday night. You know the time. You know the places. For Birdland BS, I'm Scott.
I'm Fred.
See you guys.
See you.